Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, you will hear reports from Dan Novak, Jill Robbins, and Katie Weaver. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. Finally, our national parks journey continues with a trip to one of the least visited parks in America. But first,
U.S. officials on Monday approved the first long-acting drug to protect babies and young children against respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. RSV sends tens of thousands of American children to the hospital each year. The virus is a cold-like disease for most healthy people, but it can be life-threatening in the very young and very old. Last year, a large increase in RSV cases crowded U.S. hospitals with sick children. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, approved the injection for infants and children up to 2 years old who face increased risk of severe RSV. The approval helps reduce the impact of RSV disease on children, families, and the healthcare system, said FDA's Dr. John Farley in a statement. The drug maker AstraZeneca developed the drug. It will be sold under the name Beyfortus. It is a laboratory-made version of an antibody that helps the immune system fight off RSV. Under the FDA approval, babies, including small infants, can receive a single injection to protect against their first season of RSV, which usually lasts about 5 months. Children up to age 2 can receive another dose to protect them during their second season facing the virus. Beyfortus is already approved in Canada, Europe, and Britain. It did not immediately announce the U.S. price of the treatment. FDA officials approved the drug based on 3 studies. They showed Beyfortus reduced the risk of RSV infection between 70% and 75% among infants and children, 2 and younger. Advisors to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will meet early next month to recommend exactly who should get the drug. A similar antibody drug won FDA approval more than 20 years ago. But the drug is only recommended for high-risk babies and requires monthly injections. Doctors say that drug is underused. But they expect the longer-lasting effect of AstraZeneca's shot to be more popular. In the U.S., about 58,000 children younger than 5 are hospitalized for RSV each year. Several hundred die. After years of setbacks for RSV research, drug makers have made big improvements this year. In May, the FDA approved 2 RSV vaccines for older adults from GlaxoSmithKline and Pfizer. In August, the FDA is expected to make a decision on approving Pfizer's vaccine for pregnant women. The aim is for the vaccine to pass along protection to their newborns. I'm Dan Novak.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture, or USDA, says it aims to lower food prices and increase competition among agricultural businesses. The department plans to work with 31 states and the District of Columbia to target unfair price-setting activities. It also plans to act against anti-competitive behavior in the food and agriculture sectors. On Wednesday, the USDA said it would work with a group of attorneys from both political parties. It aims to enforce laws on price fixing and the consolidation of businesses. The government says farmers have been unhappy about low prices for their products and unfair contracts with the biggest buyers and processors in the agriculture industry. Months of rising food prices have some farm groups and lawmakers wondering if companies were unfairly raising prices. Recent reports, however, show that food prices are easing. In a statement, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said, "We can ensure a more robust and competitive agricultural sector." The partnership will bring attention to anti-competitive activities, including price fixing and gouging. Price gouging happens when a seller demands unfairly high prices from buyers during periods of increased demand. The department also said it wants to create new research programs to study the problem. In the coming months, USDA will also complete new rules under the Packers and Stockyards Act. A top administration official spoke about the changes in a call with reporters. The Packers and Stockyards Act is a law meant to protect members of the livestock, meat and poultry industries from unfair trade and businesses that have too much influence over markets, such as monopolies. The USDA says it has already proposed two of the three expected rules. The department will also give money to expand the meat and poultry industries. The goal is to increase the number of processing choices available to farmers who raise animals. Vilsack said the new effort is linked to President Joe Biden's executive order this month supporting competition in the American economy. The order calls for a whole-of-government competition policy. I'm Jill Robbins.
There is very little space separating the two Koreas at Panmunjom, the most heavily armed border in the world. People have stepped across the narrow dividing line, but only at very special times. The two nations are still technically at war. Former U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un did it in 2019. A year earlier, former South Korean President Moon Jae-in walked with Kim across the border. In 2017, a defecting North Korean soldier went across nearby under heavy gunfire. He was racing across the border for safety. And this week, an American soldier facing possible military discipline went over the line. It caused an international incident that could worsen already uneasy relations on the Korean Peninsula. Much of the 4-kilometer-wide demilitarized zone, or DMZ, is forest, guarded by mines, barbed wire fences, and tank traps. Combat troops stand on both sides. The DMZ is jointly overseen by the American-led United Nations Command and by North Korea. But Panmunjom is different. It was once a small farming village inside the DMZ. Now it hosts a joint security area, and it has become one of the world's strangest tourist sites. The Korean Peninsula was split into a Soviet-controlled North and U.S.-supported South at the end of World War II. It was in Panmunjom that U.S. and North Korean forces signed the 1953 truce that ended fighting in the Korean War. The truce also led to the creation of the DMZ. There has never been an official peace treaty. In Panmunjom, there are stores, fast food restaurants, and lots of tourists. But North Korea has been closed to tourism because of the pandemic since early 2020. The South Korean side has an amusement park not far from the village. It used to have a Popeye's fried chicken restaurant. Tours to the southern side drew around 100,000 visitors a year before the pandemic. The tourist area is a short drive from Seoul. The South Korean capital lies in an easy striking range of 70% of North Korea's 1.2 million troops positioned along the border. Months and years often pass without incident, but when something happens, it can be violent. In 1976, North Korean soldiers killed two American Army officers with axes. The U.S. reacted by flying nuclear bombers toward the DMZ in an attempt to frighten the North. In 1984, North Korean and UN command soldiers fired shots when a Soviet citizen defected by running to the southern side. Three North Korean soldiers and one South Korean soldier were killed. North Koreans who flee to the south have mostly used the less guarded border between the North and China. An estimated 30,000 North Koreans have escaped since the end of the Korean War. I'm Katie Weaver.
The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has announced a new program to identify smart devices that are better equipped to resist internet attacks. The effort is designed to help the public decide which devices in the marketplace carry the best protection against possible cyber attacks. The program will issue a U.S. cyber trust mark to the most protected devices, the administration said in a statement Tuesday. The effort will be carried out by the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, or FCC. The goal of the program is to provide tools for consumers to make informed decisions about the relative security of products they choose to bring into their homes, the statement added. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel explained the program would cover a wide range of smart devices, including climate control systems, televisions, microwaves, and fitness trackers. Such devices are part of the Internet of Things, which officials warn could present increased cybersecurity threats. Several manufacturers have voluntarily agreed to increase cybersecurity for the products they sell, the Biden administration said. These companies include Amazon, Best Buy, Google, LG Electronics USA, Logitech, and Samsung Electronics. The FCC is expected to seek public comment on the program before giving its final approval and officially launching it. Officials said the public should start seeing product identifications or labels sometime in 2024. The safety level of products is to be rated by quality requirements or standards created by the National Institute of Standards and Technology. These guidelines call for products to require unique and strong passwords, data protection measures, and software improvements. In addition, the devices should have built-in tools to identify when cyber attacks are attempted. The effort will be similar to the Energy Star program, which currently labels products to show that they save energy. Labeled devices would also include QR codes to provide additional information to consumers. Officials said the products will be re-examined yearly to make sure they meet requirements. In March, the Biden administration launched a national cyber campaign. The campaign called on software manufacturers and companies to increase efforts to protect their products against cyber attacks. The increase of smart devices on the market has happened as the number of cyber crimes has increased. Internet attacks on personal devices can give criminals a way into home computer networks. The amount of dangerous software aimed at Internet of Things devices rose sharply in 2022. Cybersecurity company SonicWall has estimated many of the attacks happened in North America. The FCC's Rosenworcel said consumers can now have peace of mind that the products that they're bringing into their homes adhere to widely accepted security and privacy standards. An April report from cybersecurity company Bitdefender estimated the least secure devices were smart televisions, followed by smart plugs, routers, and digital video recorders. Internationally, the U.S. Department of State will seek to persuade allies and partners to cooperate to establish similar labeling efforts, the White House statement said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, Brian Lynn joins me to talk more about this week's technology report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Sure, Ashley. I'm glad to be here.
This week's report describes a new U.S. government program designed to help the public choose smart devices that are better equipped to resist internet attacks. As the report notes, it will be similar to an existing one for energy-saving products, correct?
Yes, that's right. Americans are already familiar with that program, which began back in 1992. It helps people identify the most energy-efficient equipment across many different product groups. One big difference, though, is that the Energy Star program is operated jointly by the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy. The one for smart devices will be led by the Federal Communications Commission.
And what can you tell us about the kinds of smart devices that currently present the greatest risk of cyber attacks?
So, yes, there have been some studies in recent years that looked at that specific issue, and they concluded that the least secure devices are smart televisions. And one way criminals can attack TVs is by using the device's Bluetooth system to corrupt its operating software. This attack method can capture any passwords used on the device and can also steal all data stored on it.
Okay. Thanks again, Brian, for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
On our national parks journey, we explore a remote island near Michigan's border with Canada. It sits within a huge freshwater lake. It is one of the least visited national parks in America. Welcome to Isle Royal National Park. Isle Royal is surrounded by the deep blue waters of Lake Superior, the largest freshwater lake on Earth by area. The park's quiet forests and rocky shores offer a kind of solitude and peace not found in some of the more popular national parks. No cars or other wheeled vehicles are permitted on Isle Royal. There are no real roads on the island. The only way to get to the park is by boat or seaplane. The National Park Service operates shuttle boats that take visitors to Isle Royal. The boats leave from two Michigan ports. The journey to Isle Royal takes 3 to 5 hours. Waters are often extremely rough.
Isle Royal is the largest of the islands within the national park. It is 72 kilometers long. The entire national park protects a total area of 230,000 hectares, including some 450 islands that surround Isle Royal. 52,000 hectares is land. The rest is water. Isle Royal became a national park in 1940. In 1980, officials named it an International Biosphere Reserve because of its unique ecosystem. Its remote location is part of what makes it among the least visited national parks. But once they arrive, most visitors stay a while. The average stay for visitors to Isle Royal National Park is 3.5 days. The average stay for visitors to most other national parks is just 4 hours.
Isle Royal offers hiking, camping, boating, and even scuba diving. The extremely cold waters of Lake Superior help keep shipwrecks in excellent condition.
The National Park Service protects 11 sunken boats for divers to explore. They are reminders of Lake Superior's commercial shipping history. The sunken wooden ship called the America is one of the most popular dive sites. The America carried passengers, mail, and supplies to many towns along the shores of Lake Superior. It first launched in 1898 and was used until 1928, when it was damaged. It sank to the bottom of the lake soon after. Today, divers can swim through the ship's ballroom, bedrooms, and engine room. Painted on the ship's engine is an American flag. Many divers take pictures of this site.
The Rock Harbor Lighthouse is another reminder of the area's commercial history. Workers built the lighthouse in the 1850s to help guide ships safely to the island's copper mines. The mining industry was short-lived, however. The lighthouse itself lit the way for ships for just 24 years. But it still stands today. Inside, exhibits and information help visitors understand Isle Royale's maritime history. A short hiking trail leads visitors to the lighthouse. Visitors to Isle Royale share the trails with a well-studied population of moose and wolves. Both species migrated to the island sometime in the early to mid-1900s. Scientists believe that moose swam to the island. They think wolves walked there during a freeze of the lake sometime in the 1940s. Scientists have closely studied the relationship between Isle Royale's wolves and moose since the late 1950s. It is one of the best studied predatory-prey relationships in the world. Researchers closely record their population numbers. Much of the research takes place during the winter, when the trees are bare. The researchers fly over the island to observe the animals from above.
Animal research is the only winter activity going on at Isle Royale. The national park is closed each year beginning in late October because of the harsh weather conditions. It reopens in springtime the next year. But for the other months of the year, Isle Royale offers refreshing lake breezes, green forests, and clear blue waters. Its stunning scenery and unusual solitude keep visitors returning year after year. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.